Hi, folks. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. If you have a free seat next to you, can you raise your hand? We want to start on time, but we want to have everyone have a seat as soon as possible. Thank you so much. Great. All right, so you can put your hands down, but we know now. If you see someone looking for a seat, help them out. Appreciate it. Just a reminder, if you don't have enough signed copies, and I can't imagine that you could ever have enough signed copies, we will have them for sale after the talk, both up at this table outside the ballroom and downstairs where you checked in. So we're going to get going as soon as we can. We just want to make sure everyone's here and seated before we go, but thank you so much. This is going to be so much fun. Thanks. Yeah. Apparently, I'm not done.
Say at the end there's a special. Do they know about that?
That is, Judy had a really good point. So we have a surprise for you at the end, after everyone talks, after you hear the talk. We're going to show a very short, very cool trailer for The Choice. And you guys, it hasn't been in public yet, so stay in your seats. Don't stampede off to get more signed copies. All right?
Came after all.
I'm going to do a quick introduction and get out of the way because you're not here to hear me talk. Wow, what a beautiful crowd. Can everyone hold their book up? Woo! I hope someone's getting a picture of that. We'll do it again. Thank you. My name's Jamie Fiocco, and my husband Michael and I are the owners of Flyleaf Books here in Chapel Hill, and we're an independent bookshop. And we're thriving because we have great, great talent like Nicholas Sparks, and we have great, great readers like you guys, and I thank you. Just a quick housekeeping note, we will make as I mentioned, we'll have a talk here in just a minute, and then we'll have a short, fantastic premiere video, so sit tight, and right before the video, the film, we will give some instructions on the pictures for this evening, okay? So we'll give you an option for a photo, and it's important that you listen, so thank you for not, as I said, stampeding out when we're done. Everyone's gonna be happy and leave happy, and it's not raining, so that's awesome. So cell phones off. Anything that's going to make noise at the wrong time, got them turned off. Don't want to be embarrassed. I'm going to do it too. That would be embarrassing. I wanted to introduce our interviewer tonight, D.G. Martin. Many of you have seen him on North Carolina Book Watch, and he's a great friend of the book business and authors and booksellers in North Carolina. D.G. has interviewed more than 250 North Carolina authors on UNC TV's North Carolina Book Watch and conducted more than 1,000 interviews on Chapel Hill's WCHL radio station's Who's Talking. He writes a weekly column published by many North Carolina newspapers and has written numerous book reviews and feature articles for newspapers, journals, magazines, and he co-authored the North Carolina entry in the Encyclopedia Britannica, no small feat. One feature series for our state magazine became a book, Interstate Eateries, which is going to be updated, I believe, in 2016. Is that the one that's updated?
Updated, expanded, and published by UNC.
It's going to be a whole new book, and it's going to be awesome. And we love DG, and we thank him for coming out tonight. Thank you, DG. And then there's some other guy on the stage.
That's me.
Okay, I'm really getting out of the way. Quick reminder, after the talk, we have more signed copies that you can purchase because you haven't finished your holiday shopping yet, and you can buy them at the table on the top level here we are now or at the tables where you checked in. All right, Mr. Nicholas Sparks. this page is a like 12 hours old, so I'm sure the data is old and wrong, but I'll go ahead with it. With over 100 million copies of his book sold, that's wrong after today, Nicholas Sparks is one of the world's most beloved storytellers. His novels include 12, soon to be 13, New York Times number one bestsellers. All Nicholas Sparks books have been international bestsellers and have been translated into more than 50 languages. We had emails from Spain, pretty much every continent, and they've been sent to your people. And that's why he's a writer, because he has to answer all of these questions. 10 of his novels have been adapted into major films: The Longest Ride, The Best of Me, Safe Haven, The Lucky One, The Last Song, Dear John, Knights in Rodanthe, Message in a Bottle, A Walk to Remember, and The Notebook, you know that one. With The Choice coming spring 2016, and if you behave yourselves, we will show the premiere of the trailer after the talk, and it's very, very cool. Please welcome Nicholas Sparks.
Yeah, we've done this before.
Yeah, but I mean,
I'm one of those North Carolina authors he's interviewed.
Whenever we can lasso him. But you're kind of busy right now.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, we're really thrilled to have you in Chapel Hill. You know, we know it's a little bit uncomfortable for you to be in Chapel Hill. You're such a, you know, you have other loyalties that get in the way. And
that's because I went to Notre Dame. I think he's referring to that.
I just wanted you to feel
yeah.
at home.
Yeah, see? That's the man. That's why I'm here, because he does these things for me.
Well, the logos are similar.
They are.
You can kind of get away from it. And what we did, because we've tried to get you to come to Chapel Hill and stay, we arranged for Notre Dame. We didn't care about the football, but we wanted the track team to be in the Atlantic Coast Conference so that they would come here and then you would come here.
Right, and right. I've heard this.
Will you come when they come? Will you?
I've been invited. You know, sometimes, you know, this is hard. Sometimes, you know, I think the last time the track meets that you'd go to, they would be in February, where I tend to have films coming out in February, so I'm always doing media. So, and then another time they would come is in May, and I don't know, I'm probably tired from finishing a novel in May, and I need a break, you know? I don't know.
Well, I mean,
I've been here before. Come on now.
But does everybody know that he holds the Notre Dame record still? Is it you still?
Yeah.
I mean, these guys know everything.
Yeah. That's how I got to college. You know, I ran track and field, and I was a scholarship athlete there. And my freshman year, I was a member of the 4x800 meter relay team, and we ran at the Drake Relays, and we got third, believe it or not, and I thought that was terrible. But it's still the Notre Dame school record, and the team that beat us is like still number one all time at the Drake Relays, and it was like, I guess, second all time ever run. And so after I learned that, I didn't feel so bad.
Well, let's talk about your book.
But we don't have to keep talking about that.
Or we can talk about...
You know, I ended up coaching track and field, too.
You coach. Yeah, you coach.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Let's do it.
Who cares about the book?
No.
I'm kidding.
To me. All right, now look, okay. The audience is predominantly, you know, by slight margin, the audience is predominantly female. By slight, slight margin.
Usually
like
is.
95%.
Yeah.
But we all are interested and really overwhelmed and admiring of your willingness to coach
track and field. Right. So, okay, I'm going to tell him. Hush now. So I coached, you know, one of my passions, I love track and field, it got me to college, right? So I happened to have a kid who was kind of fast on his soccer team when he was like 5 and 6, right? And on the football team, and he was fast. And so it gets in my crazy head, I'm like, gosh, I wonder if he could be any good if I start coaching him. And so it started very innocently. I'd drag him out after 6th grade and say, hey, let's go run a workout. Well, it turns out that the middle school in our town had another couple of fast kids, 3 more, in fact. And so this little team, we put them together, and they made the national championships in the Junior Olympic. Got dead last. Horrible, horrible performance. But then I ended up coaching these kids again the next year, and then the next year. And then the next thing you know, I'm coaching at the high school level at New Bern High School. Now, I will summarize basically what happened. So New Bern High School, it's been around for 100 plus years. Until I arrived, it had never won a state championship in any team sport. I coached for 4 years. We've won four straight track and field large school championships. We won two indoor championships. And these kids, three of those four that I originally met way back in seventh grade, by their senior years, you know, my son was a junior and there was a couple were seniors, they were the best, not just that year in the country, but of any year. So this team, they did a lot of relays. They won the state championship indoor and outdoor and won the national championships as well. But they ran relays, and they were competing in three relays indoor and four outdoor. That's the maximum you could do. They ended up having the fastest time in the country in all seven. They ran, they won the national championship in all seven, because you don't have to necessarily run the fastest time run that year to win the national championship, right? So they won all seven. And of those seven, three of them are all-time U.S. high school national records. One of them is a junior world record. Like, my kids go to track and field news, go to indoor, world
you know
junior,
something.
And there he is. That's my boy. Three national records. The fourth one, we're number two all-time in high school history. In the fourth one. In the fifth one, we were number three all-time. In the sixth one, we were number five all-time. And in the seventh one, we were number 12 all-time. Same four kids.
Well.
And there you go.
You know, this is a great...
I told you it was worth hearing.
It's.
And do you know why they were good? Because of their coach.
Right. Well,
and
you know,
I tried to tell them this.
It's a
and
great,
they just told me they
great,
ran fast.
It's a great tragedy. A great tragedy. You know, if you had stuck to coaching, you might have amounted to something.
That's what I was thinking, right?
Tell us about this book. This book is a little... All your books are a little bit different.
Yeah.
This one is especially different. Well, let me ask you. What is it, a romance or is it a mystery story?
That's a great question. Yeah, it is a... How I tend to describe it, it's a love story that devolves into a twisty mystery thriller. So in my... And so the original inspiration for the idea was... the theme of love and danger. And I'd done that with two previous novels. One was The Guardian, and then one was Safe Haven. And in both of those novels, the tension and the suspense in the latter half of the novel came from the fact that the bad guy was closing in, and you knew who it was, and he was getting closer and closer. Okay? So this one, I said, well, how do I do love and danger and do it differently? And one of the great writers of modern thrillers these days is Harlan Coben. I think he writes a great twisty little mystery thriller. And so I said, okay, what if we don't know who the bad guy or girl is, right? It's a mystery. So let's let you just fall in love with these characters and get to know them, and then slowly but surely things start to happen. And before you know it, you're caught up in something that you didn't even realize was happening at the time, and it's very dangerous. And that's what I wanted to do. So hopefully when you read this book, you might figure out part of it. I admit this, but you either get it all or you get nothing. It's like almost solving the Rubik's Cube, right? It's either solved or it ain't, right?
Yeah, but you,
that's kind of how I think of it.
You trick us. Well, tell us a little bit about where the novel is set and who the main characters are.
Sure, the novel is set in Wilmington, North Carolina, and I did that because I wanted a university, basically, because one of the characters is he's an older student, right? Not old, too old, he's 28. So, and he's still in school. So I wanted a university in the coast and all of that stuff. So chose Wilmington. The main characters are Colin and Maria. Maria is the first Hispanic character that I've ever created, and it was a lot of fun getting into that world and seeing their family unit and how close they were as a family. She's very successful. She's an attorney. You know, she went to Chapel Hill.
To where? Yeah, but where did she go to law school?
Yeah. And, you know, she and she worked in Charlotte for the DA, and now she moves back to Wilmington. And, well, I write love stories, so she meets a guy. And he's I think Colin is a very interesting character, one of the more interesting I've ever created. He's a guy who's an amateur MMA fighter. And
tell us what MMA is.
Mixed martial arts, UFC, you know, in the cage, that stuff. You know, they don't all start at the UFC. That's the highest level. You have to work up to get to the UFC. So there are amateurs who turn professional. He has no intention of doing that. This is just something he does to manage his own emotions, because this is a guy who has an anger disorder, basically. And it was, he had a very troubled past. He used to get in bar fights just because he liked to fight. It's all explained why. But he's a guy who has decided he's given one more chance, and he decides to make the most of it, and he's not going to make a mistake again. Of course, this adds extra tension toward the end as bad things start to happen. What's going to happen to our hero? Can he keep everything in check?
This is interesting because, I mean, we've got a lot of students at Carolina who would identify, I think, with Maria, your main, main character, because she went to Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, this is what discouraged me when I was growing up. You know, these wonderful women, they like bad boys.
Yeah.
And so, Colin.
Did you have that
he's
problem?
A good, I really did.
Man, that's why I wore leather jackets.
But. So you know all.
I'm a good guy too. I don't know.
Is that the thing? I mean, is that part of the hook that you know that your readers, like your fans here, are going to read this and be attracted to this? He's got other reasons that you might be attracted to him as well. But
yeah, I think if you're Maria, I think that she's got a very good head on her shoulders, and the fact that he is a bad boy is what really keeps her from. That's what causes all the questions in her own mind, because he says he is no longer. And do you believe someone when they say they've changed? And they seem to have adapted to a kind of life in which it seems to be evident. You know, you have that. But it's really one of the ways that he deals with his anger is he's just brutally honest. And that's its own. You meet someone.
Is that a good quality or a bad quality?
Well, I'll tell you what. When you meet someone who's absolutely honest, it blows you away. I mean, absolutely honest, because they're so comfortable with themselves. They say, "This is who I am," and you know, "This is who I am," and you like it or you don't, and I'm okay with that. And that's kind of how he is. And it's very refreshing, because you know you're always going to get the truth. And wouldn't that be nice to know you always get the truth? Always?
Maybe not always.
Well, no, you may not want to hear it, but would you rather be lied to is the question.
Yeah, I love that. I love that question that's
sure.
raised in your book about whether or not Colin's total honesty
yeah.
is a positive factor. And there's a nice little debate that goes on. He has a good friend, and a good friend's fiance, I guess,
who's
also a good friend.
Yeah,
she
they're fun characters.
Tell us about her. And
people love Lily in this book. Everybody who's read the book so far, they love Lily. So Colin's good friend, he lives with a guy named Evan, and they've known each other since they were kids. And Evan is just a straight and narrow, wears a suit and tie to work, and you know, drives a Prius, and, you know, I mean, he is that guy. And his fiance is Lily, who is a throwback to the Charleston, basically, of the 1960s. Not necessarily, not racially.
Maybe the 1860s.
Yeah, racially, but it's just, you know, everything's bless your heart. And, yeah, it's just, she is what she is, and she talks in flower, and she knows the perfect flower arrangements to get for every occasion and which fork to use, and she's just this. And they're also Colin's most loyal friends. And they're a fun character, and they're a hoot. I think you'll like them.
Well, let me ask you this. I was going to One of the things that startled me about the book, and you had described it as, first of all, you get involved with these characters, you fall in love with them, and then all of a sudden there's this looming danger.
That slowly builds.
But tell us about the first chapter of your book and why it's and what it does and why it's there. Because
that assumes I remember. Are we talking the prologue?
We're talking about the guy walking on the UNCW campus.
Oh, yeah.
And he's sort of giving us a hint about what might,
what is
what
to come
he
in
might
this
do.
Novel.
Because this is a bad. You know, we're worried.
Sure.
This is the cloud doesn't come all at the end. It comes at the very.
Sure.
Beginning.
You know,
why
the prologue.
You
have to set a story in motion, right? And so there's a. There's something a little bit off about this opening prologue, you know, the narrator who's telling the story, but you never know who this narrator is until literally the final pages. So that's why it's interesting.
Tell us what the narrator does, many of you all have already read that, haven't you?
Right. He's walking around and checking things out, and he's telling you about this family that he knows about. And
This is Maria's family.
Yeah.
And so you've given us a preview of the cloud of doom that's going to
threaten. And then I do my best to hope that you forget about it for about 250 pages. But I had to be, I had to be fair.
It's 248 right? pages
exactly.
Before you get
right, exactly. Something before you say, something's not right. And that's the point. And that brings up an interesting dilemma. And not a lot of people do this because people say, I had to do it for Goodreads a couple of weeks ago. And Goodreads is great. They give great reviews, and you can see what books are really liked. It's just a website or whatever. And they said, list your top five romantic thrillers. I'll give you one. Sleeping with the Enemy. All right. Who else? Throw me out. I've done three. That's not fair. It starts getting very, very tough. Now, why is that? Now, there's a ton of thrillers. Virtually every thriller has a slim romantic element in it. You watch The Bourne Identity and Jason Bourne and the French chick, they drive in the car and next thing you know, they're in love, right? And you're like, how did that happen? And that's how come they're so challenging to do. Because the moment you start introducing intense external conflict, it overshadows the internal conflict, which is really what love is about, right? It's an internal conflict. And so unless you develop that love story first, the thriller's going to take over because all of a sudden you're like, well, I don't care if she loves him. If there's a guy in the window with a knife about to stab her, why do I care if she's worried about whether Colin likes her? It doesn't work, right? And so that's why it's a very, very hard thing to do because you have to weigh them right and pace them, but you also have to be fair to the reader. And that's one of the reasons why that's such an incredibly hard thing to pull off because the moment you start introducing danger, we've all seen Jaws, right? Y'all worried about Roy Scheider and his wife and at any time while he's on the boat with the shark closing in? No. Worry about whether he's going to get eaten, right? This is what this external conflict will always overshadow that internal conflict, and that's why it's a very tough balance to pull off.
Well, if you get seduced into writing about this worry thing, are you also moving away from? Do you say, well, what do I need the romance for? Once the danger's there, nobody's worried about it.
No, I mean, I've done. One of the ways I like to look at my novels, and I hope readers do, and I think they would agree that if you read something like something maybe you've read, The Longest Ride, that's not very much like A Walk to Remember at all, is it? At all. I mean, there's nothing the same. And so what I try to do is to vary as much in the novels as I can while keeping a few things the same. There's going to be a love story in there. It's going to be North Carolina. The characters are going to be flawed, but, aspirational. They're going to generally do the right thing. And you're going to like them, right? You're going to go through all these emotions or whatever when you read it. Okay, we know these things. But other than that, I try to vary as much as possible. And that would be, so I'll vary the length. I'll vary the perspective. Is it first person, third person, third person limited, both? And I've done those. I'll vary the ages of the characters. Have the characters, is it their first love? Is it the second love? Is it, you know, are they already married and fallen out of love, right? So you vary that. And another thing that you do to get to your question is you vary the theme. So this is the theme of love and danger. So I can add thriller elements. But, you know, you go to something like A Bend in the Road, it's more love and mystery, right? There's a totally different theme. I could throw in some maybe supernatural elements, Safe Haven or True Believer, right? I could do some of that. So you're allowed to add elements from other genres, whether it's mystery or supernatural or thrillers, you know? I'm allowed to put those in my novel.
On the same track, but you're stopping at different places.
And, sure.
Well, you've said, and I can understand this, the challenge of this book was maybe a little bit more difficult than some of your other books. And would you tell us why it was more difficult?
Yeah.
And how you overcame those challenges?
Yeah, it was hard because it was harder. Because it was more complex. I mean, I'd write 5 pages forward and then say, oh, the only way out of this means I have to go back and change what I'd already written in the past. Okay, no, she doesn't do this, she does this. Okay, da-da. Then you change all this. Then you write a little bit more for it. And it was every 3 or 4 pages I had to go back and rewrite something because I wanted it to be fair and I also wanted it to be twisty. Oh, and then there were things that took me months and months to figure out. I mean, I got stymied. And I won't tell you what it is, but yeah, what I wanted was something that, okay, I have a regular guy, he's not a cop, he's not anybody, he doesn't have access to records or really that no one else can get, right? He's just a regular Joe. He's got Google, okay? He's got Google. And Google and no training, okay? Google and no training. I want him to be able to find somebody where they are in that moment. But I wanted to do it in a way that you couldn't see, that you had never seen it in a movie or films. You can't, like, triangulate those cell towers now, can you? We've all seen that, right? Can't do them secret government cameras, right? We've seen that. That's all sorts of things, right? So anyway, he doesn't have access to records. He can't call people to watch. Can't put out an APB. How do you do it? It took me months to figure out. I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to read it. Y'all think about that. You sit there, huh? That's a tricky one. You mean I could never have seen it anywhere on any TV show, even if hardly anyone else watched it? No.
This is all yours.
All mine.
Well,
but it took a long time to figure that out, and once you did, then you can write forward. So in that break, while I wasn't writing that one, I started my next novel, so that one's like a quarter done or something.
Well, we want to... I hope you'll tell us about that in a little bit, but on this.
Oh, I can.
Okay.
It's a love story based in North Carolina. And I really think you're going to like the characters. And hold your hats. It's a small town. All right. I know.
Have you set yourself up for similar challenges as the one that you described
in this book?
Or did you set it up so that I don't want to ever go through this kind of tough thing?
Boy, that one was a tough one. I mean, I was tired by the time I finished. I mean, it was very tough. But, you know, you look back and it's, you know, I'm glad that I wrote it. I do think it's one of my best novels, and I've had people who have read it say that it's their favorite or that it's the best thing I've done, so I'm very proud of it. Different novels that you don't always... I didn't think it was going to be this hard when I started it. It just turned out to be. Some novels you think they're going to be easy and they're hard. Some you think are going to be hard, they're easy. Novels eventually take on a life of their own as you're writing them, and they present their own challenges and struggles.
I want to get off track just for a moment, because so many writers have different stories about how their editors have helped them, and then others have...
There she is.
Tell us about your editor and how she might have helped you from the... I hear she's been with you from the...
Very beginning, yeah.
Tell us about
it. This is Jamie Rabb. She found The Notebook. Hey. My agent, yeah.
Why don't you stand up so we can see you?
This is my editor. I love her. Do not approach her at the end of this and say, you're writing a book. And can you have her card, okay? Jamie's always there if you have questions. And the way my editing process works, and every author is different, is Jamie sometimes knows most of the story. In this one, she knew a lot of the story, but she didn't want to know anything about the end. Jamie is the first pair of absolutely fresh eyes that gets my novel. So I write it and I edit it continuously as I work, and I'll edit and edit and edit. But then my agent goes through it, and then she edits it, and then I have to re-edit everything afterwards again. So it'll probably have 6 or 7 rounds of edits from myself and my agent. And then by then, you can't see the forest for the trees, through the trees for us, right? So it
goes. What does that mean?
I mean, you're so close to the story, you don't know if it works. Well, did I generate, is it suspenseful? Did it feel like they were falling in love? I mean, because you don't want to say they're falling in love. You want it to feel that way. And that's hard to tell if you've read something 60 times. Okay, it's just hard. So Jamie is invaluable in that, well, for two reasons. Number one, she's the fresh eyes. Well, there's a few reasons. Amazing instincts, just terrific, terrific, priceless instincts. And she's mean. I'm going to tell her she's really sweet, but then, okay, I'm going to tell you the story about The Guardian, because I think that's the fun. This is it. I write The Guardian, my first attempt at this very challenging genre, right? This romantic with this love story that devolves into danger and stuff. And I sent it to her. I was so proud. I'm like, I think I cracked this code. I waited with confidence for her call. I said, and she read it. And I called her. I said, well, what did she? Oh, I really liked it. I said, that's great. That's great. I said, she goes, yeah, there's a couple of things, though. I said, oh, well, what was that? She says, well, do you remember this? I didn't really like the main male character. And I didn't much like the main female character either. And I thought the supporting characters were all kind of cliched. And I don't think the dangerous element worked at all. And well, and no matter what you do, you have to rewrite the entire last half of the novel. And I said, well, what did you like? She goes, oh, I really liked the dog. Do you remember this? She's laughing. Now, she said it very nicely. But that's not what you want to hear after you just, you know, tried to write a novel, right? And even this is not like, oh, that's what happened before. She had me rewrite the end of The Best of Me. And she was right. She's always right. That's what's so irritating about it. But it was, so what happened in The Best of Me, without telling the story if you haven't read it too much or seen the movie or whatever, and because the novel's different than the film, you know, you have this, what I had originally tried to do was to set it up more like The Notebook, where this, you got the prologue, and then it's, or really more Nights in Rodanthe, and then she's reflecting back on what had happened a few years earlier. And I felt like I had to do this because otherwise, I had to keep it in current perspective and keep the story moving, which I ended up doing. But I'm going to tell you the challenge of that one. It's that you have the male character. He is involved. He's running. He's chasing. There's gunfire. There's this and this and this. And it's totally exciting. And in between each of those sections, I had to write about her and keep it equally exciting. and page-turning and compelling for the reader. And you know what she was doing? Waiting in a hospital. Y'all ever wait in a hospital for hours? How do I make that as exciting as this? Go reread the end of The Best of Me. I mean, originally...
Is it hers or is it yours?
No, well, she... No, it's mine. The editors don't tell you what to write. They might do a word suggestion. Oh, use this word versus that one. But no. No, just redo it. Too many notes. this is toward the end here. It's the same thing for See Me. There was editing toward the end of See Me. Yeah, there was more editing toward the end of that. Because part of that is as the pace intensified in the novel, I was writing faster, you know, so it's not as polished.
I'm sorry I made him do this to you.
No, she's wonderful. I love her. She's she's had a character named after her. I've dedicated books to her. I love her.
We understand that you do. But there's an impression, and I think you've sometimes fostered it, that, you know, you get your characters, you get your situation, you have the dynamic tension between the two, you put them apart, bring them together. Nicholas Sparks has got a formula, and he just does it over and over again, and there's no pain involved.
Right. You know, the funny thing about that is there's no formula. There is none. I've been looking for one for a long time. That's one of my big complaints. I'm like, wouldn't it be nice if there was a formula to this so that you kind of know what you're doing. But every time I sit down to write a novel, it's like reinventing the wheel. Because, you know, this next novel I'm writing, you know, it's in first person. It's been a long time since I've written a first person novel. You know, and the
previous... Have you got your characters yet?
Oh, yeah.
And tell us about them.
No.
Is it a man and a woman? Or
sure, we'll go with that. It's a love story, North Carolina.
All right.
You like the characters. That's all you need to know.
But these guys want to know about your other careers. And particularly, we're going to see a little bit of a movie, but give us a quick summary. These folks know mostly how you got into this, but tell us quickly how you got into it and whether or not it is...
You mean film or TV or Broadway or writing,
other than
coaching? Told you about my coaching.
We talked a little bit about coaching. Would you talk about film first, then we go to
TV film.
Time.
Yeah, film. Films followed a progression, I guess. You know, early on, you sell the Notebook, right? And that was the first one. I sold it in 95. Now, remember, that movie wasn't even filmed till 2002. So that thing, there was long periods of time where I thought that would never get made. I was going through directors and screenplays, and it was terrible. But I was just on the side. And then as the movies came out and they started to do well, you know, you can expand what they want you to do even more, you know. And so you get a little bit more involved, and then you get into producing and you're a little bit more involved. And all that is just an attempt to make sure that things are as good as they can be from your perspective, knowing it's a different medium and the story's going to be slightly different. And things always come up in films that you never expect, right? Oh, I love this person. This person loves it, wants to be in it. It's their dream project. She won't be available for 8 months. Oh, got to go to plan B. Well, that's film, you know, things happen. So, you know, but you're a little more involved and you feel like you at least have a little bit more control over the end result. So it's just, as I've been in it longer, you know, I've written screenplays and moved to producing as well, I guess is the best way to say it.
Tell us, looking at this book, which we're all focused on, it's the first,
See Me.
It's the first day of this book, right?
It is.
You're now in charge. You'll make a film out of this.
Yeah, you know, we did not, in the past, what's happened is my novels, they're kept in Jamie's drawer, essentially. Because there are people called spies in New York, and their job is to, like, break into Jamie's drawer. And you know, that's essentially what they do, and they leak this stuff to Hollywood. But for us to have an auction, nobody can have read it because you have to build up anticipation. So usually in the past, we've pursued this auction strategy. It's what we did for The Longest Ride and The Best of Me and other things. For this one, because I now have Nicholas Sparks Productions, I can make my own films. We decided, hey, we'll hold this one. This is a good one. We'll like this one. So yeah, we'll make a movie of it. But the next film is going to be The Choice, and the one after that is going to be The Guardian, and then this one may come after that.
These are all being Nicholas Sparks.
Yeah, it looks that way so far, yeah.
Focused on this book, help us just a little bit understand the challenges that you have by telling us what will make this a good movie, or what will be the challenges.
You know, the thing, screenplays are very different than novels. This is a story told in words, and a screenplay is a story told in pictures. Does anybody want to write a screenplay in here? Is there anyone? Okay, that's good. I don't find them particularly hard, but a lot of people do. It's a lot of people's dream. But the way I pursue a screenplay is I only think in terms of pictures and scenes. And I come up with the entire pilot or movie. And you should be able to tell what's going on by what's happening in the scenes themselves without any words at all. And then, after you have all the pictures, and you try to make them original and this and that, then you put the words in. Now, one great way, you want the cheater's way to do a screenplay, if you ever get tapped to write a screenplay, you get a book like mine, See Me, right? It's on audio tape. Go get the three-hour audio tape. It takes 12 hours to read. Get the three-hour one. Well, they've pretty much cut out a lot, right? Now you only got to cut another hour. There's your story. Then you got that. Think of some pictures. Then you're done. I make it look pretty easy. That's my secret. It'll probably be on YouTube tomorrow.
I mean, that's great, but it's maybe too simple for us to be believable. One of the charms of your writing really is that there's a lot of dialogue. There's a lot of conversation, and so you could forgive me if I jump to say, oh, he's writing the dialogue for the screenplay.
Sometimes it seems that way. What I try to do is to create characters and events and stories that feel as if they can happen to anyone. And that's really important because I think that's what helps to draw the readers in. And so these characters, you know, they talk to each other the way I hear most people talk to each other, essentially. And then, of course, once you have that, then each character brings his own conversational style to a, you know, to a story. So with that said, I just try to make it as believable as it possibly can be, which is why it seems like it could be in a movie. It's why it's like you can see it. It's because there's a familiarity to it in some way.
All right, you mentioned television.
Yeah.
Tell us what you've got going on in television.
Well, I've been watching a lot lately.
I bet.
I got a few things in the works. Let's see. I've got The Notebook on the CW. Okay, the first thing all of you have to realize is that don't run out of here and say, oh my gosh, all these shows are going to be on the air. You never know. TV's got a lot of chances where they can say no. They can say no to the idea. They can say no to the treatment. They can say no to the pilot. They can say film the pilot and then say no. They can put it on the air and then say no. So you never know. So the thing in television is you put a lot of stuff out there. So these are just, think of this as a lot of potentials but unlikelies. They always sound like everything's gonna get made. They don't. So one of them is the CW is doing The Notebook, right? The middle years, essentially. What happens after Rachel McAdams dropped that suitcase and shrugged and looked up at Noah? We know what happened at the end of the story. But, well, did Lon ever make a reappearance? How did her parents take this? What was life like for Allie when she suddenly didn't have money? Right? What happens when they have children? Right? All we know really is they argued a lot. They loved each other, but they argued a lot. How did that work? Okay, let's find out. I don't know. Will anyone want to watch it? It's kind of soapy. It's fun. All right. Let's see. There's ABC picked up a sitcom called The Next Chapter. And that's more about the idea that's funny as opposed to really. There's been a lot of press that it's really in me and my life. It's not. For starters, the guy's named Ben Diamond. But it's about this guy who's been, you know, married for like a long time, 20 plus years, and then he gets divorced. He's written all these love stories. And I guess they see some parallels or whatever. But anyway, but it's not about me. What it's about this funny idea is because he writes these stories, these love stories, these romantic elements. And it turns out he really in his real life doesn't know much about it at all, right? And he's got to enter the dating world and he's got friends and stuff like that. So that's actually pretty funny. It was a pretty funny pitch. I'm not surprised they bought it. It was pretty funny. I wish you could hear it because it's funny. I don't even think I can tell you. I don't know. I think ABC.
Sure you can. Yeah,
no, I don't know. I think ABC owns it. I'd have to have everyone turn off the cameras. But it's funny. The opening scene. And then let's see. What's another one? Oh, HBO. They hired me to do a blind pilot. So I'll be writing a pilot for HBO. Don't think love story at all, folks. It's HBO. All right? Think Southern Gothic dark. If that's not what you like, don't watch it. It'll be good writing, but you may not be your cup of tea. It's not what I generally do.
You're writing all of these?
Yeah.
And is she helping you? Is your editor helping you?
No, she doesn't do scripts.
She doesn't do scripts.
No, I do those.
You got another editor?
No.
You just do this?
Zip, zip, zip.
Well, all right. We're almost through. And so I wish you would tell us. One of the things I think that impresses those other North Carolinians, first of all, thanks for keeping and staying in North Carolina.
Sure.
We should have the kids study geography by reading your books because we know the eastern part of North Carolina.
Exactly.
But the other thing that you've done is that you've been really, you've inspired the rest of us by your generosity and your community and service, and you have now a foundation.
Yeah.
Would you tell us just a little bit about how that came about and what your objectives are?
Yeah, really, much of my philanthropy takes place in three primary areas. The first is, I support Eastern North Carolina, everything from cleaning the Neuse River to, Shakespeare festivals to, Mercy Clinics, whatever, right? I get a letter from all of them, so you have that. That's more on the personal side. 10 years ago, I started a school, the Epiphany School of Global Studies. That is a major source of
In New Bern?
In New Bern, yeah. And it's a school that I'm proud of. It's about 500 students. It's K-12. And it's college prep. It's technically an independent school, but it's got its roots in the great commandment to love God and your neighbor as yourself. And so, there's chapel on Sunday. We try to keep the cost as low as possible so that people who aren't wealthy can go. And we try to give an education that's really not only college prep, but heavy on learning about the world. Not because I don't like North Carolina or the U.S., it's just that the world has changed. And our kids and kids, they need to understand that, if you work for Coca-Cola, you might end up in Buenos Aires or Mexico City or London. It's just the way it is. Or even learning to speak Spanish fluently now, that gives you a bump in pay whether you're a nurse or a banker or a police officer.
Or even if you have a Southern accent, character.
Right.
Did.
It doesn't really matter how that works, So it's really, and especially in rural communities, I wanted to show that teaching kids in rural communities that aren't necessarily as ethnically diverse as, let's say, a major city, that it's possible to have them learn about the world that they will grow up into. And that's just the way it is. And most school, and we're way out on the leading edge of this. And of course, then my foundation is there to make that possible in other places. And that's what we do. It's primarily focused on rural communities and really allowing kids. There's a lot of scholarship for disadvantaged kids. And it's ways to introduce students to the world. And that, to me, is what education is about. It's not just about memorizing facts and figures. It's about preparing them for the world they're actually going to live in, which is different than the education that I had, right? I mean, the world's changed in the 20 years that I've been writing, you know? I mean, back when I started for film, for instance, you know, way back when, you know, the U.S. box office was 80% of the market. Well, now the U.S. box office is 35%. That's it. I mean,
it's changing.
It's just changing. You either go with the change and you learn to do it, or, you know, it's going to be tougher. And you know, if you're in a place like Chapel Hill, there's wonderful public schools, and you know, there's wonderful public schools in a lot of different places, but rural communities, really, you know, if you look at the state statistics, that's really where education has its struggles.
Well, thanks for your example. Thanks for teaching us more about our state. Thanks for coming to Carolina. We look for you to come back soon.
All right. 5-minute Q&A. Okay.
We have time for just a few questions. Okay. You're good? Project?
Okay. Mm-hmm. No, I tore down that house. So, but I you know, I can write. The question is, I had a very simple office. You know, people have, they might imagine writers, they look out over some beautiful lake or whatever. They want this wonderful view. And maybe some authors do. I don't, and I can write anywhere. I've finished novels in hotel rooms, on airplanes. I wrote The Notebook laying on my living room floor with the kids. They were very young, crawling around, landing on me or whatever. I've written in quiet, room against the wall. My current office, it's a bigger desk, but it doesn't really face anything. I think it faces a punching bag or something. It faces into my gym, basically. I'm above the garage, and I just go up there and write. But that really is the preference of the author. Some authors need absolute silence. And I think Carl Hiaasen needs absolute silence. I think he wears literally every tune out everything, whereas Stephen King likes to play rock music in the background. Whatever works, that's what you do. Writing is a creative process, and you just do what it is. But where, it's never really bothered me. That was just a function of, at that house at that time, that worked, I'll do it.
Another question over here?
Sure.
I'm Hispanic, and yeah. I've read all your books.
Thanks.
And I'm really excited that this is the first book that you've done that has a Hispanic in it. I just want to know what made you want to do that, because I've read all your books and it's mostly Southern styled, which I'm from the South. I'm from Winston-Salem. But I really like how you're doing this.
Hey, well, thank you. Well, again, it goes to partly what I said, the world is becoming more global, right? You know, 20 years ago, quite frankly, there were fewer Hispanics in this state. Now there's a lot more, and it's really it's very common. And so, okay, let's reflect that reality, because what I want to do is to reflect reality more than anything like that. So, I think, you know, it's a good character. You'll like her.
I wanted to ask about structure, in that I've studied it a little bit, and having, say, a disabled character, or like this book seems to have a guy that's got a lot of problems starting out, that there are, in other words, are you aware and do you use some formulas of character and plot to help you guide yourself as you're writing these stories? Even though each one's different, it seems to me like you may have in your mind kind of a tool set, and I just wondered if you did.
Yeah, probably, but I don't know that I could put it into words. You know, I write something, and I look at it, and then I say, that's not right. I don't know why it's not right. This is just not, I read things, I go think, Jamie, how was it? Oh, that was good. I'm like, no, it's not. That's terrible. I'll call you back. I don't know why, right? It's just the process. And where that came from, it's intuition. Maybe because I've read a lot. Maybe because, you know, I've watched a lot of story, you know, both visual story, you know, TV or movies, plays. I read. I just know, generally, if it's right or not, and then when it's what I want it to be. I don't know what that is, but you know, if you read a character like Colin, he's like nobody I've ever created. I guess the closest, and this is pushing, it might be John in Dear John, maybe. I guess that would be the closest. So.
Hi, I've read almost all your books too, and I love them all.
Thank you.
What is the premise of choosing which one gets to be a movie?
Instinct, timing, things like that. Like, yeah, we've got The Choice coming out in February. I've got The Guardian coming out again. I don't want to have two movies in a year and no movies the next year. So it's things like that. That pretty much guides it. So you don't want to be overexposed, but you don't want to be underexposed. And want to keep all of you who like the movies happy, but not too happy so you take it for granted. Because I want you, I don't want you waiting for DVD, right? I want you out in the theater. So it's a balance.
Got one more.
Sure.
Yes, first of all, thank you so much for being here. It is really a privilege.
You're welcome.
But I would like to know why in every one of your books and movies that I have read or seen, someone always dies. And I'm so sad.
Yeah, what a great question, right? People always wonder that, you know? And I tweeted this answer today because I had a tweet interview with Amazon today. Sorry, Flyleaf. It's interesting. What is a happy ending? What is a happy ending? Like, if you say a happy ending in a book is if the main character gets together. Now, if you haven't read all the books, you might want to muffle your ears because I might run through some spoilers here. But, okay, The Notebook, in the book, they both lived. Ah, is that a happy ending? They made love in the final scene. Okay, message, that was sad. Walk to Remember? I didn't tell you what happened. You could take it either way. Rescued, they got together. Bend of the Road, they got together. True Believer, they got together. The Wedding, they got together. The Choice, they got together, right? All of these, right? You go through The Lucky One, they got together. The Longest Ride, they get together. Right? There's been a few sad ones, sure. But the majority have been happy. Now, even in something like The Last Song, where they get together, someone does die. The dad. Why is that? So why is that? Because what is the purpose of my particular genre? It's not a romance novel. That's romantic fantasy. You read it because you know what to expect. You want to be swept away by romance. Okay, that's a romance novel. It's great. You get what you read it for. What's the purpose of what I write? Because you don't know if it's going to be happy or sad or bittersweet. You don't know if they're going to live, die. You don't know anything. You don't know if it's going to be danger or mystery or any other thing. What's the purpose then? That's it. The purpose of, someone said it, the purpose of a novel like mine is to move the reader through the entire range of human emotion so that they feel as if they've experienced a full life by the time they close the cover. Right? A horror novel's supposed to scare, thriller's supposed to thrill. That's all mine's supposed to do. Okay? What if I cut sadness out of that? Do you have all the emotions of life? Who here hasn't ever been sad? It's part of life. So there's sadness, there's happiness, there's frustration, anger, there's envy, confusion, curiosity, hope, dreams, infatuation. It's life. That's my novels.
Well, can I do one thing? On the first page of the first introduction at UNCW, you've got them passing Keenan Hall. You know, we got a few Keenan buildings and professorships here. And so I met with Betty Keenan, has just had some surgery on her shoulder. went by to see her today, and she said, what are you doing? I said, you know Nicholas Sparks? She said, Nicholas Sparks, I'm a big fan. Would you get him to autograph a book for me? And would you send this to Betty Keenan?
Sure.
Okay.
B-E-T-T-Y.
B-E-T-T-Y-K-E, one N, A-N. Shoulders gonna be better.
There you go. All right. I think now we see something on TV.
You got the whole team.
Well, I wanted to thank the Carolina Club for a beautiful venue here tonight. Thank you so much for everyone for coming.